We're holding on Tess Amud Aleph, the fourth line. Okay, we're in the middle of talking about. We said that Rosh Chodesh, that Aleph Tishrei is Rosh Hashanah, among other things, for Yovels. So we started to discuss that because, on the face of it, Yovel takes effect only on Yom Kippur when they blow the shofar. We said fine, but Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher ben Berakha says that to a certain extent it begins already Rosh Hashanah. And already at that point, the Avodim are free from working. They just don't go home yet. And the fields are also kind of in limbo until Yom Kippur. So in this connection, we also mentioned that you have a pasuk that says, V'kidashtim es shnasa chamishim shana. And we mentioned in that connection the fact that Mosifin mechol al hakodesh. So you would think, therefore, that the Yovel actually extends a little bit into the following year, past Rosh Hashanah of the end of the 50th year, and therefore we have the pasuk that says Yovel he, and that means that not. So now the Gemara says, let's discuss that point. Where do we get this point that we say that we have to add from Chol to Kodesh, such that we would say, we would have thought that that applies to Yovel, and we need a pasuk to tell us that not. So like this, Titania, we learn in a Braisa, the pasuk says, now you have to rest on Shabbos, and it says b'chodesh v'akotzu tishbos. You have to rest from plowing and planting. Now, on the face of it, if it's talking about Shabbos, you have 39 melachos. That's only two of them. Why list those two? So Rabbi Akiva Omer, ain't it sort of? So therefore, Rabbi Akiva is going to say that we're not talking about Shabbos in that half of the pasuk at all. Yes, the first half of the pasuk begins sheishes yamim tavet v'yom shvi tishbos, but then the pasuk is going from Shabbos to Shmita. And the Pasuk is saying, even within those, Rashi explains on the Pasuk, in other words, in effect, we're saying, even those 6 days, you should know that there are certain exceptions, namely the year of Shmita. So Rabbi Akiva, Einet Sodech Loim Chodesh V'Kotzer Shol Shviyas, it doesn't need to say that we're talking about the plowing and the planting during Shmita year itself. We already have Psukim in Parshas Bahar when it talks about Shmita in detail, and it says there you're not allowed to plow. Not plow. It actually doesn't mention plowing over there, but it mentions you're not allowed to plant your field or harvest your crops or whatever. Which, okay, Tosfos points out it's true. It doesn't mention plowing over there, but still it seems that our pasuk, the main thing is it's talking about the harvesting. Otherwise, it would just say Chodesh. So the harvesting, we already know from Parshas Bahar, you're not allowed to do it during Shmita. When we say, Tosfos also points out that, first of all, it means that you're not allowed to harvest it in the normal way, but Daraisa, at least, you're allowed to harvest it not in the usual way. There's a whole concept also called Svichim, where you have, we touched on it yesterday, where you have crops that grow on their own from seeds that are left over from previous years. You have, for example, grain. You harvest your grain. Inevitably, some seeds fall down and they remain in the ground. And the next year, they sprout. Those kinds of things with grain, with vegetables, with other kinds of things like that are called svichim. There are certain details, d'rabbanan, about that you're not allowed to eat svichim in general because there's the concern that people are going to actually plant and then claim that it just fell on its own. But d'araisa, you're allowed to eat them. You can't harvest them in the normal way. Tosfos also goes on to talk about over here. Let's say, for example, we can talk about you have, for example, crops that began growing during Shmita. Let's say Svichim that began growing during Shmita, but they only were completed. They only became fully ripe after Shmita is over. So Rabbi Akiva says so. It doesn't need to tell us that you're not allowed to plow and harvest during Shmita, because we know that already. Ella, so what is this pasuk v'chodesh v'akotzu tishbos is talking about? Ella chodesh shal erev shviyas hanichras l'shviyas. It means that you're not allowed to plow during the year before Shmita, going into Shmita. In other words, you come to a point during the year when, for example, Rashi mentions now that you have, for example, a field with trees in it. Now, a field where you're going to be growing grain, you're anyway not going to plow on Erev Shmita, because why would you bother? You're not going to be planting it the following year. It would just be wasted effort. But you have, let's say, for example, a field of trees where you plow it every so often in order to dig up, in order to loosen the soil and allow the trees to get better nutrition. So if you're doing it during the year before Shmita, at a time of year when at this point it's not really going to do them much good during that year anymore, it's more what it's going to be doing good for them during the year of Shmita itself, then already on Erev Shviyas you're not allowed to do that. And in fact, in the Mishnayos and Shviyos, it talks about there are certain deadlines during the year after which you're not allowed to do such. It's in the Rambam Perek Echad recently, yeah. There are certain deadlines by, after which you're not allowed to partly daraisa because of Tosfos Shviyos we're saying over here and partly derabanan. Anyway, so that's what the pasuk means, says Rabbi Akiva. So we're talking about plowing from the year before Shemitah, but it's the year before Shemitah. You're still allowed to do agricultural work, but this is already where you're doing it for the sake of Shviyos. The kotzer shol Shviyos, a yotzim l'tzoy Shviyos, and vice versa, where you have plants that grew during Shemitah. For example, again, you have grain that grew at least one third of its growth during Shemitah, where it still has Kedushas Shviyos. So now, by the time it finishes developing, it's already the eighth year. It's already the year after Shemitah. Nevertheless, you still have to treat it with the Kedusha of Shviyos. And here's where Tosfos disagrees with Rashi. Tosfos points out that later on, a couple of blocks further, we have a different pasuk from which we learn that concept. Morning. So Tosfos says that we're talking really about not so much about doing kedushas shviyas, but about the dinim namely, for example, that you have to eat whatever can be eaten and not throw it away and not give it to animals and not sell it and so on and so forth. So Tosfos says that really we learn from someplace else, from a different pasuk. Rather, we're talking about over here the fact that you can't even harvest this grain in the normal way. So that's what Rabbi Akiva says. That's what we learn from B'chodesh of Akotzer Tishbos. So according to him, you have the concept of Mosif Michol al Kodesh. You see that you have the Kodesh of Shviyas itself, and that's not enough. The Torah is telling you to also add before it and after it. So there's your Mosif Michol al Kodesh. On the other hand, Rabbi Shmuel says no. The pasuk of B'chodesh of Akotzer Tishbos is in fact talking about Shabbos. You're going to ask, then why is it mentioning only those malachas out of 39? Because the pasuk wants to tell you what kind of harvesting we're talking about. Ma chodesh rishus, just like plowing is always rishus, there's never a mitzvah to plow in the sense that even though now you have to grow grain for the omer and for the shteil lechem. But there's no particular mitzvah to plow for them. If you don't find a field that's already been plowed for the purpose, sure, you have to plow it. But that's not part of the mitzvah in and of itself, in the sense that if you found a field that was already plowed, you could just as well use that. There's no special mitzvah to plow for it, as opposed to the harvesting has to be done for the sake of the omer. So ma chorish rishus, just like plowing is always rishus, af kotziv rishus, the same way the harvesting that we're talking about that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos, and Rabbi Shmuel is understanding this pasuk to be talking about Shabbos, not about Shemitah like Rabbi Akiva is. So the same way, what kind of harvesting is also on Shabbos? Only the kind that's rishus, only the kind that you're doing on your own without it being a mitzvah. Yotzek, tzir ha'omer, shu mitzvah. Therefore, Rabbi Shmuel says, the pasuk is, in other words, implying to you not the harvesting of the omer, which is a mitzvah, in the sense that even if you found already harvested barley, you have a mitzvah to harvest it specifically for the mitzvah of omer. Therefore, Rabbi Shmuel is telling you, the pasuk is telling you that you allowed, that is doicha Shabbos. Which, by the way, would mean that Rabbi Akiva disagrees with that. Rabbi Akiva would say that you could just as well harvest it before Yom Tov begins. So, before Shabbos begins. So, according to him, the usual rule we have in Pesachim and in other places where Rabbi Akiva says any machshirei mitzvah that could be done before Shabbos are not doicha Shabbos. So, therefore, by the same token, Rabbi Akiva would say that in this case, the grain has to be harvested sometime when it's not Shabbos or not Yom Tov. But according to Rabbi Shmuel, and that's the halacha, it is in fact Doicha Shabbos. So that's what we learn. So he says that's what we learn from B'chodesh of Akotzer Tishbos. Well, then the question
is. So the halacha is like Rabbi Shmuel?
The halacha in this case is like Rabbi Shmuel, yeah. And the reason is because you have Stam Mishnas in Menachos that go according to that. Yeah. It is true that actually we do use the pasuk b'chodesh of Akotzer Tishbos kind of for both of them. It is true the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva as far as Tosfos Shviyos, but we also learn from Rabbi Shmuel's derasha that we're comparing chodesh to kotzer. Okay, so now the question becomes:
Is that the only issue?
Is that the only issue,
Rabbi Shmuel? Has a mitzvah d'erche Shabbos?
No, of course not. You have other pei. Milah, for example. Milah b'zmana is d'erche Shabbos. There's a whole sugya.
He agrees with that?
Of course. Everybody agrees with that. But here we're focusing on that Rabbi Shmuel wants you to know, telling you, the Pasuk wants you to know that the harvesting of the Omer is Deucha Shabbos. The Korban itself is Deucha Shabbos. There's no Chiddush in that. All Korban is Tzibur, that Kavur, the Hamzman, that have a fixed time, are Deucha Shabbos. But that you should, that this is the harvesting, which is a prerequisite for it, that should be Deucha Shabbos. Rabbi Shmuel says we need a Pasuk for that. Rabbi Akiva would say you don't need a Pasuk, and in fact, you don't have a Pasuk for it. And in fact, the Halacha, and in fact, he would say that it's not. Okay, so now the question is, Rabbi Shmuel, Mosifid Mechol HaKodesh Menolei. Well then, according to Rabbi Shmuel, where are we learning the concept of Mosifid Mechol HaKodesh? Rabbi Akiva is learning it from Bechorosh of Akatsu Tishbos. But if Rabbi Shmuel is using that pasuk for a different drasha to teach us that the harvesting of the Omer is Deucha Shabbos, so according to him, where do you get the concept of, Where do you get the concept of Mesif and Mechol HaKodesh? So the answer is Nafkale Meditanya. He learns it from the following. We learn in a Braisa. The Pasuk says about Yom Kippur, V'inisim es nafshe seichem v'sisha. The Pasuk goes, V'inisim es nafshe seichem v'sisha l'chodesh bo'erev. You should afflict your souls, meaning for Yom Kippur, on the ninth of the month in the evening. And the Pasuk continues, Me'erev ad erev tishbe. From evening to evening, you should rest your Shabbos. So let's analyze that phrase by phrase. The Braisa says, V'inisim es nafshesechem v'sisha, when it says you should afflict yourselves, you fast, and you have the various other inuyim of Yom Kippur. When it says on the ninth, Yochol b'tisha, maybe it literally means that it begins on the ninth. No, Talmud Lomar b'erev. The Pasuk says in the evening, where the evening is already beginning the tenth. But if we only have the word ba'erev, then you would think that it means only after it gets dark. So only after Tzeisa Kechavim does Yom Kippur begin. But after all, the Pasuk says on the ninth, implying that there has to be part of the ninth in it also. So what does that mean? You begin fasting while it's still daytime. So from there we learn that you have to add from Chol to Kodesh. And the Braisa continues, Ein li ela b'knisasei. Now, based on that, we would only know that you have to have Tosfos Yom Kippur at the beginning, because we're saying B'sisha. B'tziose minayin. How do we know that also when Yom Kippur is over, you can't break your fast and start doing malacha the moment it's over. You have to add a little bit of time. Tamad loyma me'erev ad erev. Therefore, the Pasuk says, from evening to evening, ad can be ad bichlal, ad va'ad bichlal, up to and inclusive of. So it includes, you have to include some of the erev, some of the evening after the 10th, which is already going into the 11th, as Yom Kippur. Now, we would only know that that's true as far as Yom Kippur. Shabbos is minayin. How do we know the same din applies to every Shabbos, that you can't just begin it exactly at Tzeis HaKechavim, that you have to add a little bit extra? Which is, by the way, one reason why we have the concept of lighting Shabbos candles 18 minutes before Shkia. That's the toast for Shabbos. There is actually an opinion of the Yireim, the Sefer Yireim, one of the Rishonim, who learns that when the Gemara talks about Bein HaShmoshes, that it starts a certain, that it lasts for a certain amount of time, and the Gemara brings several opinions about it, the Yireim learns that amount of time is actually before Shkia. So according to him, there's a very solid reason to light candles at least 18 minutes before Shkia, because literally at that time, 18 minutes, according to him, is when Bein HaShmoshes begins, and you already have a Suffolk day, Suffolk night. This is what we're saying, Tosfos Shabbos and Tosfos Yom Kippurim, by the way. We're not just talking about Bein HaShmoshes, because that itself is a Suffolk. Of course you have to stop during that time. We're talking about before Bein HaShmoshes, and before and after Bein HaShmoshes, respectively, at the beginning and the end, that you have to add a little bit. Mind you, by the way, there are places in Eretz Yisrael where they have a minhag to light candles far before 18 minutes before. In Yerushalayim, for example, they have the minhag to light candles 40 minutes before Shkia. There are a number of places in Eretz Yisrael that follow that minhag, and other ones that have a half hour or so. So yeah, all of that is part of this idea of toast for Shabbos. So how do we know that applies to Shabbos? Talmud Lomar, Tishbesu. Therefore, the Pasuk says, Me'er about Erev Tishbesu, you should rest. And Yom Tovim Minayin, and how do we know that also applies to Yom Tov? Talmud Lomar Shabbatchem. Therefore, the Pasuk finishes off your Shabbos, which is an extra word. It could have just said Tishbesu. So therefore, so the bottom line is, ha ketzad. So what does all this mean? Putting it all together. Kol mokum sheyesh bo shavus. Any time where the Torah tells you to rest from something, on Shabbos, on Yom Tov, on Yom Kippur, also Shemitah, Mosifin, Mechol Kodesh, you have to add from Chol to Kodesh. So now, therefore, so we would have thought, so now going back to what we learned yesterday, you would have thought the same thing applies to Yovel, that maybe you have to keep a certain Tosfos Yovel after it, and therefore we're saying that no, since it says Yovel he, you don't need to. But other than that, you always need to add a little bit of Chol, you always need to add a little bit of Chol to Kodesh on both ends. Rabbi Akiva Eger, actually, in Gilyon HaShas, asks that, fine, so according to Rabbi Shmuel, then, we're learning all of the various Tosfos in, we're learning from this Pasuk, Me'erev ad Erev Tish Pesu Shabbat. But what about according to Rabbi Akiva? Rabbi Akiva is learning from Shvius. So fine, that so it means that you can't do Malacha during Shvius. And even that, only certain kinds of Malacha, there are only certain kinds of agricultural work that are also D'Oraisa during Shvius. Most other kinds of agricultural work are also only D'Rabbanan. So where are we getting from that the whole concept of that you should have to stop doing all malacha in Tosfos Shabbos and Tosfos Yom Kippurim, let alone that you should have to fast, that you should have to stop eating during that extra time before Yom Kippur. So he leaves it as a tzarech iyun. Different mafarshim talk about, actually there are rishonim who address this point. And they say that really Rabbi Akiva is not learning the whole concept of Tosfos of Masifin Mechol al Kodesh. He's not learning it exclusively from Shemitah. He's actually learning it from a halacha l'Moshe Mitzrayim, which Tosfos refers to that halacha l'Moshe Mitzrayim over here. So therefore, so Rabbi Akiva can learn all of them from there. So fine, as far as Shemitah, particularly that you have to stop certain malachas where you're reaching the point where you do where the doing of them is only going to be effective for Shemitah itself. They're not helping you anymore for Erev Shvius because it's too late in the agricultural year. Fine, that he learns from B'chodesh of Akotzer Tishbos. But the rest of Tosfos Shabbos and Tosfos Yom Kippurim and all that, he's learning from a different source, from halacha l'Moshe Mitzrayim. So that would answer Rabbi Akiva Eger's question. There is, by the way, a good deal of discussion about that. Taka, to what extent does the din of Tosfos Shabbos and Yom Kippurim apply? Is it in fact, as we're saying over here, D'Oraisa? Maybe certain aspects of it are D'Rabbanan. Especially, are we talking about, again, at least when it comes to Yom Kippur, you have the Tosfos of it in that you're not allowed to eat, and you have the Tosfos in it that you're not allowed to do Malacha. What parts of that are D'Oraisa? Who says, what parts are D'Rabbanan? So we had actually back in Masech the Beitza, not so long ago, we had something where it talked about that you have people who are eating and drinking all the way until Bein HaShemoshes, and we don't tell them anything because Mutav Yushogin Baal Yumazidin. So even if we say, as we're saying over here, that is D'Oraisa, still it's not explicit in the Pasuk, and therefore it might be one of those things where we're not Moichei in them, where we realize they're not going to listen anyway. And if it's D'Rabbanan, then all the more so, we're generally not, where we're not moicha on somebody when we know they're not going to listen, definitely with things that are banan. Okay, fine. So the Gemara continues, but Rabbi Akiva haivi inisimus nafshesechem v'sisha mai oven lay. Now, so Rabbi Shmuel is learning from this inisimus nafshesechem v'sisha, he's learning the whole concept of Tosfos Shabbos and Tosfos Yom Kippurim, since it says that it begins on the ninth. Rabbi Akiva, who's not learning from there, what is he doing with that pasuk? The answer is Rabbi Akiva would use it to teach us what Chia Barav Midifti taught in a Braisa. The Pasuk says V'nisimas Nachshesechem Mesisha, so we have to ask V'chi Mesisha Mesanin. The fact is we don't fast on the 9th. V'alei Basiri Mesanin. When do we fast? Yom Kippur is the 10th. Ela Loimaloch. So it comes to tell you Kol Ha'oichel V'shoyse V'chi. Anybody who eats and drinks on the 9th, preparing himself for fasting on the 10th, mala all about kosev kilo yistana chi vastiri, then the posit considers it as though he fasted on the 9th and the 10th. Now, that doesn't mean, of course, you don't actually fast on the 9th. The fact is, you're not allowed to. Even, for example, tainus cholim or other such things, you're not allowed to fast on the 9th because you have a mitzvah to eat. But the point, so Rashi explains, in other words, that the posit is calling this that you eat on the 9th is calling it an inu. So you get credit as though if the Eivishter had told you to fast on that day, you would have fasted. Therefore, you get credit for it, even though, in fact, what you're doing is eating. There's a few other explanations why it is. Why should the Eivishter consider that like an inu? After all, you're eating and drinking. So there's one explanation also that, for example, it can be very difficult. The Shibboleth HaLeket gives this explanation. It can be very difficult to eat and drink very heartily and then right after that go into fasting. You have, in fact, a Gemara in Tainus that mentions for that reason that there's a certain fast. The Chachamim were not Keveya on a Sunday because it would be too hard to go from the eating and drinking of Shabbos to the fasting on Sunday. So now when a person eats and drinks heartily on Erev Yom Kippur, and then he goes right away into fasting on Yom Kippur, which makes things even more difficult for him. So the Eibishter gives him credit as though he had fasted the 2 days in succession. Which pasuk? This needs to have to say him. It's a pasuk in Parshas Emor. Yeah. Okay. Another point is also you have the famous story that the Torah tells about the tailor who bought a fish on Erev Yom Kippur. The story, there's an Indian to eat fish, particularly on Erev Yom Kippur, because it's easy to digest and it's less likely to cause problems with carry or whatever. So the Torah tells a story about from a medrash about a poor Jewish tailor in the city of Rome who one time Erev Yom Kippur he goes to this market to buy a fish. And he finds there's only one fish there, and there's a servant of some Roman nobleman who already is there and wants to buy it. So the Yid keeps on outbidding him. Akitsu, he ends up buying the fish for a huge amount, 12 gold dinar, which is his entire savings. The nobleman, his servant, comes back without the fish. He's very upset. He calls in the tailor for an explanation, and the tailor explains it's Erev Yom Kippur. It's the day before Hashem is going to forgive us for our avedas. So we eat and we drink and we're happy because we're confident that Hashem will forgive us our avedas with proper tshuva. And part of that celebration is to eat fish. And therefore, I bought the fish, and the nobleman accepted the reason and let him go. So that's another point why it's so important to eat and drink on the ninth. Why the Eibishter gives us such credit for it as though we fasted on the 10th, because it demonstrates our betochen in the Eibishter that he is chanan amabel esloyach and that he will forgive us on Yom Kippur as long as we make the effort. There is, by the way, it talks about in Chassidus, it talks about the idea that Yom Kippur itself, then the neshama is feeding the body for that day. Usually the body feeds the neshama. You eat food and your neshama lives off it. On Yom Kippur, it's the other way around. You're doing the neshama is feeding the body, but on Erev Yom Kippur, you're doing in a way an even greater mila, namely that you're working on avodas abirurim. You're taking food and you're taking food and using it for the avoda of Erev Yom Kippur, which is in a way even an even higher thing. Where you're taking gashmius and turning it into ruchnius, as opposed to on Yom Kippur itself, where the ruchnius of your neshama feeds your body. Anyway, Rabbi Akiva learns that concept from this pasuk, since it says that you fast on the ninth, because the pasuk is considering it as though you as it gives you credit as though you fasted on the ninth. Okay, so that was all a digression to talk about this matter of Tosfos of Tosfos Kedusha of Mosif and Mechol al Hakodesh. Now let's get back to the matter of Yovel. So because we're going to actually talk about it later on Daf Chaf Aleph, we're going to talk about why Yom Kippur is not 2 days. The basic reason is because it would be dangerous to fast 49 hours in succession. But we're actually going to talk about that on Daf Chaf Aleph a little bit, Ben Sejan. Okay. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, we learn it a Braisa. Now, you have like this. The Pasuk says, the Pasuk says, Yovel hi shnas ha-chamishim shana tiyulachem. Well, you have several psukim back-to-back. You have several psukim back-to-back that use the word yovel hi, and in particular, you have the pasuk that goes like this, v'kidashim es shnas ha-chamishim shana, you should make the 50th year holy, ukrosim dror ba'oretz l'chol yeshveha, call freedom for all the inhabitants in the land. This is, by the way, the Liberty Bell that has the inscription on it, proclaim liberty throughout all the land, they took it from this pasuk. One thing is, by the way, it was meant to, they were commemorating 50 years of the Pennsylvania colony. So they thought of it like a yovel of a 50th year anniversary. Anyway, so cross and dura ba'otz chol yishveh, yovel hi tiyolachem, it should be a yovel for you. V'shavtem isha l'chuzose, each person should return to their ancestral estate, meaning their land that they may have had to sell. V'isha mishpachta d'ashubo, and each person returns to their family, the eved, the avodim, ivrim, and almos ivrim. So we have a number of things then that are taking place during Shemitah. That are taking place during Yovel. Let's consider. We have, you're not working the land. In that sense, Yovel is like Shemitah. You have to send the Avodim home. You have to give the fields back to their owners. and you have to blow shofar. So which of those things are essential? Tana Rabbanan, Yovel hi, when the Pasuk says it is Yovel, that means afa pishalei shamdu, even if the people are not stopping to work on the fields, even if they're breaking Yovel and working on the field, afa pishalei toku, even if they didn't blow shofar, still Yovel is still, shamtu over here rather means to return the fields to the owners. So even if people are being over on that and they're not returning the fields to the people they bought them from, or afa pishalei toku, even if they didn't blow shofar, nevertheless, the dinim of Yovel are in effect and you're not allowed to work the land that year. Yochel afa pishalei shilku, you would think the same thing applies even if they didn't send the Avodim home. Maybe even then Yovel is still in effect. Tamad l'mahi, divrei Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda says, since it says Yovel he, it means, as the Gemara is going to explain further down on the Amud, that he explains that the he refers to the sending the Avodim free, and therefore that is the essential thing. Without that being done, it's not Yovel. And therefore the dinim of Shemitah's Karka don't apply. Rabbi Yossi says no. Yovel he means afa pishalei shamtu. Fine, it means even if they didn't give back the fields, afa pishalei shalchu, even if they didn't send the slaves free, nevertheless, Yovel is still in effect. Yochol afa pishalei toku, you would think that Yovel is still in effect even if they didn't blow shofar. Again, tamad l'mahi. So he's learning from the same word he's learning that the essential thing is tkiyas shofar, whereas Rabbi Yehuda is saying that the essential thing is sending the avodim. So, Rabbi Yossi says, given that we have a ribui in the pasuk that seems to be implying that no matter what, it's still yovel, because it says yovel, implying that no matter what, it's going to be yovel. But then it says he, which is a mute. So you have a ribui and a mute. So Rabbi Yossi says, so what makes me say that the tkiyas shofar is more essential to it being yovel, to it having the dinim of yovel as far as working the land, rather than sending the avodim home free and giving the fields back to their owners? Why do I say tkiyas shofar is the essential thing? So Rabbi Yossi says, because Rabbi Yossi says she'ef shel olam below shiluach avodim, you could have conceivably there's no sending of slaves. It so happens that there's no avodim ivrim this yovel that have to be sent home. So you can't say that if no avodim are sent, it's not a yovel. Who says there's going to be any? And the same thing he would say as far as the karkos. V'ef shel olam below tkiyas shofar. But it's impossible without tkiyas shofar. There's got to be a shofar someplace in the world. So necessarily, therefore, we have to say that the Torah is saying the most essential thing is something which there's always going to be, namely tkiyas shofar. Dover acher, or another explanation, Rabbi Yossi says, why do I say tkiyas shofar is the indispensable part? Because zum asura lebeistin, v'zu einam asura lebeistin. Because tkiyas shofar depends on beistin. They're the ones who either they blow themselves or they tell other people to blow for them. V'zu einam asura lebeistin, as opposed to sending avodim, is not up to beistin, it's up to the individuals. So what are you going to say? Well, people don't want to send their slaves home, and therefore that's going to cause that there's not going to be that Yovel is not going to have its kedusha at all. More logically, Rabbi Yossi says it would be something that depends on Beis Din, where we can expect Beis Din to do the right thing at least. Fine. So the Gemara says, my dover acher. Why does Rabbi Yossi have to give a second reason? What's wrong with the first reason? So the reason is because b'chitema, you might answer back to his first reason. You're telling me the first reason, Rabbi Yossi, the reason why it doesn't depend on shaluach avodim is because not necessarily that there's always going to be shaluach avodim. Conceivably, it could happen there are none. Come on, we're going to say efsher the lekachad b'sefer olam d'lo mishalayach. You're going to say it's impossible. Not there's not some place in the world somebody who has an eved ivri who has to send him free, and if he doesn't, then you're going to say it's batal. So that answer is not good enough. Because, yes, it could conceivably happen, but it's very unlikely to happen among the whole Jewish people. There should not be one Eved Ivri, come Yovel. Therefore, better answer is Zu Masur LeBeistin, V'Zu'eni Masur LeBeistin. Because Tkiyas Shofar depends on Beistin, and the other one does not. Okay. So the Gemara says, Bishleim L'Rab Yossi Kidkama Taimi. Okay, so Rabbi Yossi has a good reason that he's saying, a good logical reason to say that it depends on tkiyas shofar. No tkiyas shofar, no dinim of yovel in terms of not working the land. Ela l'Rabbi Yehuda, my timer, but why would Rabbi Yehuda say that? And by the way, there are Mefoshim who point out, or I think Rabbi Yerushalmi maybe points out, or something, that late in the time of the first Beis Hamikdash, you had such cases. There were times when the people were Rishoyim and they weren't sending their Avodim home. In fact, you have the Haftarah, Parshas Mishpatim, tells of a story right a couple of years before the Churban Bayis Rishon, where the people finally decided, and then people, the regular people, the noblemen, whatever, finally decided, you know what, we got to listen to what the Torah says. We got to send our Avodim Ivrim and Omos Ivrius home. It's been long enough. And they made a bris to do that. But then they reneged on the bris and took these people back and forced them to become Avodim and Shvachos to them. And the Eibishter sent, Yirmiyah HaNavi, with a very harsh nevuah about that. Therefore, that you've just brought the Churban closer by that. But anyway, I mean, you have Bechlal. It talks about why was there 70 years of Golos Babel, a number of psukim in various places. It's in the Teuchacha, in Parshas Bechukosai, and in greater, Rashi gives One second. Because they did. They went and found where these people lived and forced them to come back. They were stronger. Yeah. But anyway, I was going to say, in the Teuchacha in Parashat Bechukosai, where it mentions that the land is going to have to rest for the amount of time that you didn't do Shmittas and Yovel. So it actually gives the whole elaborate calculation over there. You find it also in Psukim at the end of Yirmiyah and the end of Divrei Yomim, whatever. That the gist of it is that during the whole time, during the 800 odd years that the Jewish people lived in Eretz Yisrael, from when they came in with Yeshua until the Churban Bayis Rishon, during that time, there were various times when the people were Rishoyim altogether. There were 70 Shmittas and Yovelos that they hadn't kept. And therefore, so that's why there were 70 years of Golos Babel for the land to rest, to make up for that amount of time. So here we have examples, in other words, where we're saying that there should have been times when Yovelos are in effect. For example, because based in Blue Shofar, according to Rabbi Yossi, or because people did send their Avodim free, according to Rabbi Yehuda, but yet they continued to work the land, and that counted then towards the 70. So altogether, it was over a period of 436 years. During that time, if you calculate, you have 64 Shmittas and 5 Yovelos, and then the next Shmittas cycle had already begun because the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed in the first year of a Shmittah, and therefore that was counted also. So Rashi makes the calculation over there where we see that there was that number of years when they weren't keeping mitzvahs. You can find it in Rashi. You can find it in Rashi on Parshas Bechukosai. Okay. Fine. So now the question is, Bishleim Rabbi Yossi could come a time. So Rabbi Yossi's reason we understand. He gives two logical reasons why Tkiyas Shofar is the essential, indispensable part that makes it Yovel. El Rabbi Yehuda, my timer. Why does Rabbi Yehuda say that the essential thing is sending the Avodim home? So the reason is, Omakro, Krosim Dror Ba'aretz, because right before the word Yovel He, the Pasuk says you should proclaim liberty, you should proclaim freedom in the land for all the Avodim. The Kasavar, now Rabbi Yehuda holds, Mikra Nidrash Lefonav, Veloy Lifnei Ponav. Rabbi Yehuda says that when you have a drosha in a pasuk, like for example here, the word Yovel He, where on the other hand, again, Yovel is a ribui, implying no matter what, it's going to have the dinim of Yovel, and He, implying a miut, that you need something essential for it to have those dinim, what is it going to be? The immediate thing before it, which is the Ukrosim Dro. So therefore, he says, Veloy Lefnei Ponav, it's not going to refer to something that's a couple of psukim earlier. So therefore, it's not going to refer to the Tkiyas Shofar, which is in a previous pasuk. Now, Dekula Alma Dror Loshen Cheres, the bottom line is we are saying, everybody agrees, that the word Dror means freedom. But how do we know that? My Mashma, we're crossing Dror Ba'orot Chol Yeshver. So we're translating Dror as freedom or liberty or whatever, but where do we get that from? So the answer is Detanya, Ein Dror El Loshen Cheres, the word Dror means freedom. And Omer of Yehuda, Ma Loshen Dror, where do you get from the word Dror to the word freedom? It means kimidayor be dayora. It means that the person is now the kind of person who can live wherever he wants. Dayora means a resident. So he's able to reside. He's able to live wherever he wants. He's able to stay wherever he wants. Umervil skirta b'chol medina, and he's able to transport merchandise throughout the whole country, as opposed to an eved who's limited in where he can go. Some of the Mephoshim point out that also the Moivul Schora, another meaning of the Shurish Dur, Dalad Resh, another meaning of it is to carry. In Aramaic, you have, for example, words sometimes like a Dura Tuna, a person is carrying a load. So therefore, the word Dur means that he's able, meloshen dira, that he's able to live anywhere, and also meloshen dor, of carrying, that he's able to carry schora and sell it wherever he wants. So therefore, dror means a person who is free to do such things. So therefore, krosim dror means call for that kind of freedom. Okay. So there we have, sort of Yehuda holds that the essential thing is the dror, because again, that's the thing that says right in the pasuk, right before Yovelhi. And Rabbi Yossi says the essential thing is the tkiyas shofar, for the reasons that he gives, because inevitably there's always going to be a shofar, whereas there's not inevitably avadim, and because it depends on beis din rather than leaving it up to the individual. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Chiya Abba Amar Rabbi Yechonon, Zudiv Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Yossi. So those are the opinions of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. Each of them says that out of the three things of Yovel, that out of the three special things of Yovel, that is, tkiyas shofar, shiluach avodim, and shmitas karkos, returning the fields to their owners. So each of them is saying there's only one of them that's essential for it to have the dinim of Yovel in terms of not working the land. Abba Chachamim Omrim, but Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba says, the Chachamim says, shlosht and ma'akvis by all three things are ma'akvis. So if any one of those three things was not done, the tkiyas shofar, the sending the avodim home, and the returning the fields, if any one of those three things did not happen, then it doesn't have the din of Yovel. And then, in other words, then there would be no issue of working the land during that year. Again, what might end up happening is that year is going to end up counting towards the 70 years, as we were just saying. But in terms of that particular year, if they're working, they're not actually over on the issue of working the land during Yovel, the Chacham are saying. Different Achronim talk about, for example, the Minchas Chinuch and others. So what do we mean? Do we mean that if there's even one person who doesn't send his avodim free or return the field that he bought, then it means the whole thing doesn't take effect? Or does it mean if Rove of the people are not doing that, or the other way around, even if maybe one person does it, then that's enough to trigger the dinim of Yovel? Anyway, where do the Chachamim say that all three are active? Kasavi, because they hold Mikra Nidrish Lefonav, Vilef Neponav, Ula Achrav. They hold the word Yovel He. You can douchen it together with the words right before it, across and dur, as well as what came in the pasuk before that, namely to blow the shofar, as well as what it says in the pasuk afterwards about returning the fields to their owners. So therefore, they say the pasuk is implying that yovel he. When is it yovel? Only if all three of those are done. So the question is, so they're learning from the miut, from the word he, that unless you have all those three, then you don't have a yovel. But v'oksiv yovel. But what about you have the ribui from the word yovel, implying that no matter what, it is a yovel. So according to them, what is that ribui teaching us? And the answer is ahu dafkilu b'chutz la'aretz. That means you should know that the dinim of yovel apply in chutz la'aretz. So what parts apply in chutz la'aretz? V'oksiv ba'aretz. The pasuk says call out freedom in the land, which means in Eretz Yisrael. So what applies in chutz la'aretz? So it means, hahu, what it means is, this man should know you, dror ba'aretz, when the dinim of sending slaves free apply in Eretz Yisrael, know you, b'chutz la'aretz, they also apply in chutz la'aretz. So in other words, during the time when Yovel is in effect, not only does an owner of an Eved Ivri in Eretz Yisrael have to send him free, but even if he's living in chutz la'aretz, he also has to send him free when it comes Yovel. This man should know you, b'aretz, and know you, b'chutz la'aretz, but when it's not in effect in Eretz Yisrael, then it's not in effect in chutz la'aretz. So that's what we're learning from the word ba'aretz. But once it says yovel, it means that when it applies in Eretz Yisrael, ba'aretz, then it also applies everywhere else in the world. Which is the expression that we said before, chad v'sofa olam, earlier on the Amud, we had the Lashon that the Rabbi Yossi says, it's impossible that there shouldn't be one person at the end of the world who has an Eved Ivri. So literally, we can say at the end of the world, because anywhere in the world that a person has an Eved Ivri, he has to send him food when they're doing it in Eretz Yisrael. By the way, worth mentioning in this connection, we don't have Yovel nowadays because Yovel only applies when Kol Yeshvei HaAleah, when all of the Jewish people are living in Eretz Yisrael, in the territories of their Shvatim, when you have 130 odd years, 140 odd years before Churban Bayis Rishon, Shevet Reuben and Gad and Chatzi Shevet Menashe were taken into Golus by Sancheiriv, at that point Yovel ceased. Then, which is why we had in the calculation we said before, there were only five Yovelos that they ended up missing. Later on, what happened was about 100 years later, the Eibishter sent Yirmiyahu HaNavi to bring back many of those people, many of the Aseres HaShvatim, from their Golos. When that happened, then they came back to Eretz Yisrael. They resettled in their old territories. Yoshiyahu ruled over them. So even though Yoshiyahu officially was the king only of Yehuda and Binyamin, practically speaking, he ruled over these remnants of the other Shvatim that were in Eretz Yisrael as well. And therefore, in his times, there was one last Yovel, 30-odd years before the Churban Bayis Rishon, there was one last Yovel that was in effect. You find that the Yechezkel, when he begins his Nevuah, he starts by saying, "Vayhi b'shloshim shana," it happened in the 30th year. Rashi on the Pasuk explains, based on Gemara's, that it means it was the 30th year since that Yovel. It was a few years, that Yovel was 36 rather years before Churban Bayis Rishon. He started saying Nevuah 6 years before the Churban. Also, when Yechezkel gives the Nevuah about the third Beis Hamikdash, he starts by saying that it was in the 25th year of our Golos, 14 years after the Churban, and it was Rosh Hashanah, but also LaChodesh, in the beginning of the year, on the 10th of the month. So what do you mean? Rosh Hashanah is not the 10th, it's the 1st. It means that year was that year would have been the next Yovel, had there not been the Churban. That year would have been the next Yovel, and of course, Yovel has the Rosh Hashanah for it in a certain sense. We said it's Yom Kippur, because that's when everything officially takes effect, and the slaves go home, and so forth. What were you going to ask? Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. So that, if you remember, then good. Okay. I'm sorry about that. All right. Fine. Oh, okay. Okay. Fine. So that takes care of Yovel. So, the next thing we said in the Mishnah was Velanatiyah. The next thing we said was that Aleph Tishrei is the Rosh Hashanah as far as Natiyah. A young, newly planted tree, meaning you have the dinim of Orla on it. So when do the years of Orla begin? Rosh Hashanah. When does each year of Orla begin? Rosh Hashanah. So first of all, Menalon, where do we know that from? So Dichtiv Shalosh Shanim Arelim, the Pasuk says it should be Orla for 3 years. Ochtiv Vashana Harevius, then it says in the 4th year, it's Neter Avai, and it has the dinim very similar to Maisa Sheni. You have to take it to Yerushalayim and eat it, or exchange it for money and take the money to Yerushalayim and buy food there and eat it. So when do these years begin? The Yalef Shana Shana Mitishrei. So we learn Exeter Shava on the word Shana from Tishrei. We brought the pasuk before that the Eibishter watches over, in particular Eretz Yisrael, and judges it. From the beginning to the end of the year, so the year then begins in Tishrei, and we said over there we know that it's in Tishrei because we learned yesterday because we also had what Balaturim brought that it says Meireshis without an aleph, and Meireshis is the same letter as Mitishrei. So therefore, so it starts from Tishrei. So the same way over here, the years of Orla begin from Tishrei. So they want to ask for Ligma Shana Shana Min Nissan. Why don't we instead learn the Gzeira Shava from Nissan? Dichtiv Rishon Hu Lachem L'Chod Sheh Shana, and say therefore that the years of Orla begin with Nissan. And the answer is Donin Shana She'en Mechadoshim Mishana She'en Mechadoshim. The same logic that we used before when we were talking about how we know that Shmita begins in Tishrei, because we said we have a pasuk. The pasuk about Nissan uses not only the word Shana, it also uses the word Chod Sheh. So therefore, if we're going to, and here on the other hand, it only says Shana. Shalish Shonim Arelim doesn't say anything about Chadashim, and the pasuk about Tishrei doesn't say anything about Chadashim either. So therefore, Donin Shana She'enim Chadashim, Mishana She'enim Chadashim. We're going to learn a year that's mentioned without saying anything about months from another place where it mentions the word Shana without saying anything about months. The Ein Donin Shana She'enim Chadashim, Mishana She'yeshim Chadashim. Rather than learning from Nisid, where it says not only Shana but also Chadashim. Now, when we don't have a choice, then fine. When we only have one other place to learn the Gzeder Shava from, fine. Sometimes the Gemara will point out, sometimes we even have a Gzeder Shava where it's not even the same word. The Shava Koyin or Vaha Koyin, for example. But here, where we have a choice, not only we want to learn from the same word, but where possible, we want to learn from where it has the same context, with or without the word Chadashim. And therefore, since by Erla and by Mereshes Hashana, both neither of them does it say Chadashim, we're going to learn one from the other rather than learning it from Nissan, where it also says Chodshei. So that's what it is. So the year of Orla begins Tishrei, and we'll continue tomorrow, Best Hashem, talking about the details of how that works out. When exactly we begin, when do we say actually that you can have less than a year and it counts as a full year? After all, you're not going to say that if you plant a tree right after Rosh Hashanah, that whole year is going to be year zero. So we're going to talk about that point tomorrow. Up to what point can you plant it and that will count for a year? And when do we say? After all, we also said in the Mishnah that Chamishos B'Shvat is Rosh Hashanah Le'ilan. So how does that tie in over here when we're saying Rosh Hashanah? So we'll talk about that tomorrow, Rosh Hashanah.
Yeshikayach. Wonderful day.